I'm Tammy Van Dunge, your host for Executive with a Cause. Today on the show, I welcome Louise Baxter, the CEO of the Starlights Children's Foundation. Today, we're going to chat about the good, bad, and hard things about running a charity. Louise, welcome to the show.
Hello, it's lovely to be here.
Matt Burr of Motive Consulting actually introduced us. And when he did that, I was so grateful because I've seen a lot of your posts on LinkedIn, and I just thought, what a great opportunity to have a conversation with you about all things charity, and especially from an executive point of view.
Yes, that's something that I'm always happy to chat about.
Well, for people that are not familiar with Starlight, would you mind telling us more about the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. Starlight was established over 30 years ago with the mission of brightening the lives of seriously ill children. And our programs to this day have expanded and evolved from our original program. And what we now talk about is a vision of every child should experience a happy childhood. And why? Because happiness matters. Happiness in childhood is one of the key determinants of how you perform in your education, your employment, and importantly, long-term healthy life behaviors. You can say when a child is diagnosed with a serious illness, their ability to be happy and to actually enjoy their childhood. You know, childhood is that time when we have no worries and we're laughing and playing and learning all the time. And that is often taken away from them because of the treatment and surgery and that they have to go through. And so at Starlight, we have a range of programs that work in three key areas. They're about transforming the hospital experience for these children and their healthcare experience. It's about social connection. And I think that one thing we've all learned in these last few years of COVID is that when you are managing infection control and illness, that social isolation can be extreme. So we've all seen that. So we have programs that manage that social isolation. And we also have programs which provide in the moment entertainment just to break the monotony and pain and stress of being in hospital and undergoing those treatments. So that's what we do today. And we're a national organization. We're in every children's hospital across the country and then some. So we go into other hospitals when they're running specific orthopedic clinics. And we also support children in 140 remote Indigenous communities around the country.
Wow, significant footprint there. I have to say that personally, having a young nephew that was in ICU for 2 months after he was born, I can appreciate, you know, if he was a little bit older, how much more important these services are to children and to their families, especially if they're going to be in hospital for a long period of time. So it's such a feel-good, I suppose, charity to know that you guys are in there to help these people. If a child is going into a program, how do you find out about them that they might need your support?
Well, the fact that we're in every children's hospital means that in many ways they find us.
Yeah.
And then we're there in their space, and we're there to provide in the hospitals that safe haven where they can simply be a child and have fun. And, you know, for me to see a child walk through the door of a Starlight Express room, which is our space that we build within the hospital environment, especially if it's a child for their first time and they've been recently diagnosed, they generally might come in a wheelchair, an IV drip, their head is down. You know, you can see the burden of the world on their shoulders. And for me to see that child immediately lift as they come into this space that's so different from the clinical aspects of the ward, and to see them lift, to then interact with Captain Starlight. And Captain Starlight is our superhero who's all about fun and chaos and in that hospital environment. And our Captain Starlights all have a performance background, and we give them additional training in how to interact with a child in a hospital and healthcare environment. So you see the child interact with Captain Starlight, and to see that same child within 15 minutes roaring with laughter and completely forgetting where they are and why, that's what Starlight does in all of our programs in different ways, but that's the transformation that we support in all instances.
Mm. So how many staff and volunteers do you have to support these programs?
Well, we have around 350 paid team members. And then we have another group of volunteers. Now, that group, that number has changed during COVID because obviously as soon as COVID hit, one of the first things that hospitals did was stop access for volunteers, and because everything had to restrict. We were still an essential service. So we had, our programs were significantly supported by volunteer support in the hospital. So we would have our paid Captain Starlights and team members and also volunteers, but that's been removed in these last few years. And we're now working on how do we encourage those amazing volunteers, because volunteering has always been part of our DNA right from day one. And they are incredible individuals who enable us to achieve so much. And, you know, they support us through fundraising. They support us in our Starlight Hubs, which is, other people might refer to those as offices, but we call them Starlight Hubs around the country. But importantly, they helped us in our programs. And that's been restricted. So we're working on getting them back. But we had hundreds of volunteers who would work for us in any month. So, and it actually goes up to when we had fundraising days, we'd have over 3,000 volunteers.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, an enormous pool of volunteers who support Starlight.
That sounds like a huge effort to manage all those number of volunteers as well. Before we get into more details about the operations, which I'm very curious about, I'd love to know more about you, Louise. Like, how did you get involved in Starlight to begin with?
Okay. I think that it really always takes me back to a story in my childhood and when Starlight did not exist. And we had, you know, those close family friends that you have, that you go on holidays, that you see regularly. And, you know, children in the both families are similar ages. And one of the eldest child, and I'm the eldest in my family, was diagnosed with a childhood cancer. And I observed him as a, you know, young child. And I saw the pain. I saw the disruption it caused, the emotion within his family, the impact on his siblings. And I noted all that kind of as a child and kind of parked that. Then I moved into a marketing career. So I started work in FMCG marketing after 10 years in that space and working with some of the best brands in the world. I moved to the advertising world, again, working on big global brands with Kellogg and Procter & Gamble, United Distillers. And I absolutely enjoyed that. I then started an advertising agency with some friends. And it was while I was working there that I actually reached that point of thinking, there must be something more valuable I could do with my marketing communication skills than, you know, sell chips and shampoo. And so I made the decision then that, and my partners were incredibly supportive of that, that I wanted to change. And I thought at that stage, because we're going back quite some time now, we're going back to 2001, that triple line reporting, the third sector, was the thing that everybody was chatting about. So it was when corporate social responsibility was really kind of starting to grab. And I thought that I would, with my background in corporate, that I'd ultimately go into a CSR role in a corporate. But I also noted that I didn't have the experience in the charity sector. And there was a six-month role in corporate partnerships here at Starlight that I decided would be a great thing for me to do in the first instance. So I took that. And then after I'd been here a short while, the CEO said, would you consider staying? So that's how I came to Starlight. And I shared the story of my childhood and what I observed, because Starlight is there to brighten the lives of those children and families in that moment, to bring those families back together, to overcome that dysfunction and disruption and the financial and emotional devastation they're going through. That's what we do. And so it really resonated with me personally.
So that's when you first went to Starlight. But
yes.
How did you get into the CEO role?
Okay, well, I left Starlight. That's how I got into the CEO role. After 6 or so years, I was really feeling like it was a little bit of Groundhog Day. and then I needed a new challenge. And one of the things I say to people constantly is if you are not leaping out of bed every day to do what you are to do, you know, to enjoy your role, then you've got to think about why you're there. Because, you know, you can't live in this world that I loved Starlight, but I shouldn't stay here if I was becoming disengaged in any way, shape or form. That's not good for me. That's not good for Starlight. And so I had a chat to the CEO and they said they were staying for a significant length of time. And so I said, well, I need to change. And so I actually, you know, it was very amicable. You know, I worked with the Starlight board who gave me some contacts and connections for my next role. And so I left Starlight. And then about 15 months later, the GFC had hit. Things were really challenged. And I think the CEO had then decided that it was time for them to leave. And the board called me and said, would I come back to Starlight in the CEO role? So you know, it's a great example of, you know, of the fact that it's okay to leave. Mm. I didn't leave saying I hate you. I left saying I love this organization, but for me personally, I need a new challenge because I feel like this is not challenging me. Yeah. And so I really encourage people. I encourage people to leave if they're not engaged and aligned. And I always say when I'm talking to my team and I share that story and say, if you're not, because what happens when people stay too long at organizations, they start to get disengaged and everything starts to annoy them. And they sit in this disengaged corner and try to drag others into their corner. And if they leave, it's better for them, it's better for the organization, and then they flourish in the organization they go to because they get that new challenge. So it's a win-win-win. So whenever I'm saying to someone, if you feel like you need to leave, you've got to listen to that within you. And when I'm saying that to teams, I have to say, I'm looking at no one, because people are always thinking, is she looking at me when she's saying that? And I'm not. It's just a general theory that I have that you always need to be leaping out of bed and loving what you do, because life's too short. And it also brings out the best in you, and every organization wants your best self, you know, in that role that they employ you for every day.
Well, I think that's a great segue for just the conversation around recruitment and retention of good staff. Mm-hmm. We all know it's such a competitive market for any not-for-profit to compete with industry. Wages have gone up. You posted something on LinkedIn just the other day that was talking about some of the unique things that you do for your staff, in especially around a hybrid work hybrid work environment, and some of the other benefits that you provide for them. Would you mind talking a little bit more about that and your philosophy behind it?
Yeah, sure. Again, I probably need to give a bit of a backstory. Mm-hmm. So this Starlight's always been about positive psychology. Everything we do for the children and young people we support is based on the tenets of positive psychology and supporting well-being and resilience, because if we do that for the children, they then have improved health outcomes. And so for us to be an authentic organization, we need to have that same positive leadership approach for our entire team. And so while we'd always been about positivity, we formalized that nearly a decade ago with the Positivity Institute. And so every team member at Starlight is provided training in positive psychology. And this is about what are your strengths in this space? How can we help to mentor you to grow those areas that can also be strengths? And what is the toolbox that you can use to support your own mental health and well-being? Because unless you are the best you can be, then you can never be a leader, a coach, a supporter of other individuals. So, you know, that care and compassion was already built in. So we are an organization that has been awarded Aon Hewitt Best Places to Work, Great Places to Work. We're in the top 20, been in the top 10. We've been in even number 2. We're the only charity that's ever been in any of those listings. And we're up there with people like Atlassian and Salesforce and all those fabulous organizations. So we've always been very focused on how we can support our team. And we truly do it so that they can be their best in life, so that they have these tools for their life, because then we know they have their best shot at bringing their best self to Starlight. So We've always done that, and we've always been ahead. We were flexible before COVID. And in fact, my board termed the phrase match fit. And because with that positivity and trust that you need, we had the technology in place. So we could just say to everyone, go home, because we were used to people working wherever it was best for them to work. So since the pandemic, we then reviewed this and thought we need to think about some other things and add those into what we're doing for the team. Diversity and inclusion is, you will see from the flags behind me, also something that's very important to us at Starlight. And so what we did was we considered our options to the team and said, this is the offering for you, the new initiatives to work at Starlight. In the first instance, we have now portable public holidays. So if Easter is not something that you celebrate personally or culturally or religiously, then you work with your manager before the Easter break and say, I actually want to work on those days, but I will take 2 days off at a later time. And close by those, but I will take them off at another time and use them for another, something that's important to me. So we have portable public holidays. We also reflect on the fact, and we learned this a lot through COVID, we have so many team members who have moved to Australia and their families actually are in the US, the UK, in China, in India, wherever their families are. And we have seen them historically use their annual leave to take visits to visit family. Now, we know that that sometimes is not a great refreshing break. It can sometimes be exhausting to do that. And so we said, why don't we enable our team, assuming it works for what they're doing at that point in time, to be able to work anywhere in the world. So people can work for a month anywhere in the world, and that then preserves their annual leave for things that actually boost their mood, lift their spirits, refresh them. And that's what we want. We have also given all team members 3 best self days. So these can be used for anything that supports your mental health and well-being. It might be a French cooking class. It might be a language class. It might be a golf lesson. It might be meditation. Whatever it is that you do, please do that. So that's what we have. And we then have Shining Brighter Together days, so that team members have to commit to 25 days where they come into a hub with their team with the intention of then connecting with another team on a project. Because I think what we've done really well during, and I mean generally as a world really well during COVID, is technology enabled us to connect, but we specifically connected and sometimes grew our connections and understanding and with others in our own team. But what makes any organization great is to not have that siloed approach. So to be moving in a way where you are thinking about how you intentionally collaborate with teams outside yours, I think is really important. So we have no mandate to come in at any number of days, but we say to team members, we trust them, and we say, what is best for Starlight? What is best for your team? What is best for your role? Because I think if you just start and stop with what's best for me, you kind of miss the two-way impact of anything that is connected with working flexibly and working in a way that suits the task at hand.
If you don't mind, I'd like to dive into some of these a little bit deeper, because I think there's some great lessons learned for other organizations mm-hmm. that may want to adapt something similar. Talking about specifically the work anywhere in the world for a month, for that one logistically, I know that there's been a lot of talk about bigger companies trying to do stuff like that, and they've had issues with the technology piece for sure. Also from in some cases, from an enterprise bargaining agreement perspective, sometimes that's been a bit of a challenge as well. And also from the time zone perspective, that's also been a challenge. How do you manage those types of things? Because certainly not every role is going to be able to have that flexibility, not the front line in particular.
No.
How do you manage that from a practical point of view?
Well, our frontline workers are our Captain Starlights. We'll use that as an example, who are all, I spoke about the fact they're performers. we have always had flexibility with them that as soon as they get a gig, so if they get a gig that might be in London or traveling, I think one of them at the moment is traveling the USA with this show Bluey, we just say to them, go, and we hold their job open for however long they're gone. Okay, so they've always had that flexibility. So this is something new for our hub team members. And although it's not that new, because we've had team members who have had to, for family reasons, pre-COVID, go to Norway, and they've worked. So if you trust people, and if it is the role of the time, because we can't have people going overseas if it's a very hands-on event-specific time and they're in an event role, that, you know, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, it has to be sensible. It has to make sense for their manager and their role. But we trust people. And, you know, if you can, everyone can connect at the start or the end of the day, no matter where you are. And so then if they have that time to be in flow and working in those other times, that's all fine. So I think trust is the most important thing that you have to have within your organization to be able to make this happen. And of course, you know, we say to them, you need to be in a place where the technology will work, and you know, you have certain access baseline, otherwise it won't work.
Yeah, understand that. And then from the Shine Brighter Together part of it, where you're talking about teams collaborating together 25 days a year, I think is what you said. Can you provide us an example of how that actually works?
Yeah. So if, for example, our Marcoms team are getting together just as a Marcoms team, that's not a Shining Brighter Together days, unless they're coming in to actually interact with the philanthropy team and work on a new campaign together. So it's just saying, we always did this. We always collaborated in this way. Don't forget about the fact that, yes, you can work within your teams, and teams are coming in to our hubs right around the country now, which is fantastic, because it's great to hear that noise and energy and catch up on all those water cooler conversations that we've missed. And it's amazing how much information you usually pick up in that way that's been missing in these last few years. So what we're doing is we've got apps that we're working with, and some of those aren't 100% yet, but we're about to move. So we've been trialing apps in this space, which means you book in, people know you're coming in, you make sure the other team's there, you work together. So we're working with some apps as well to enable that and to make sure that, you know, it's not a case of you should have been here yesterday.
Yeah, okay. And you've mentioned a couple of times about technology and how that's enabled you to do things even before COVID hit, and now is allowing you to do more from a hybrid workplace point of view. I'd love to know more about the things that you've done in terms of investments and how that's working for you.
Okay. I think that one of the things that's really important is, you know, we're a people and relationship business. We're all about people. And however, technology is incredibly important in that, because the purpose of technology is to enable more of the human. So if you're doing your technology right, it means it takes away those repetitive administrative tasks. It takes away, you know, if you have one source of truth, it takes away any sense of duplication or error, whatever. And it means that the team, that there's somebody asked me the other day about redundant team time. It's like there is no redundant. It means that the team then is able to utilize that time for those things that humans are remarkable at. And so that's the building relationships. That's the innovation piece. That's a creativity piece. And so we have always relied on technology and been excited by technology in terms of the way that enables more of the human. And I think you see that from the industrial revolution. What it did was, well, it helped, machines made things for us, and it made other things more simple. So I think that, you know, if we talk about 5.0 in terms of revolutions, that's where we are now. And I think that if we can all embrace that, that's really important. But we have apps, and I think one of the mistakes we've made was by, in a previous CRM we used, the team put in too much customized code. They built code. And I think the lesson there is, and we've just actually implemented a new CRM kind of through COVID. And in fact, that was on the cards before COVID. And one of the things that we committed to was, even though our revenue was, you know, was impacted during COVID, you should not stop investing in anything that was going to make you smarter on the other side. And so we continued that investment because we knew we needed it and we had to move on that. And our CRM is everything for us. And so, because it helps us manage our relationships with the children and families, with our volunteers, with our donors. And sometimes people are in all of those groups. And so to be smart in that space, we have to have a really smart CRM. And so previously with our CRM, we had built enormous amounts of code. And our learning there is we'd already moved to the cloud. So that was always strategically a priority for the last, I don't know, 10 years. But what we've also done now is said we need to ensure that any apps that we use, because they can be superseded so quickly, or in the case we were using a fabulous app and it was bought by someone because they wanted the people, not the app, and they closed the app down. So you need to ensure that everything plugs in and out and you can replace it with something better at any time in the future. So I think that that's one of the learnings that we've had. And so now we have an attitude towards any of these things, which is no code or low code, because you don't want to customize it so that you can't actually download the next upgrade because there's so many knock-on impacts that happen within your business. And my sense on this is always the people who are delivering and developing these systems are smart, okay? So why would I think that a process I have trumps what they're doing? And so we say to our team, if we need to change our process to match the CRM, that's probably the thing we need to do. We don't build the CRM to match our process, because my best guess is our process is probably the one thing that's out of step.
Great advice for any organization, especially when it comes to maintenance. And as you pointed out, do you guys have an internal IT team that does most of your work, or do you partner?
Well, we partner. We've recently moved, should I say names or not?
Sure, feel free.
Yeah. We've just moved to the Microsoft CRM and we're thrilled with that. And we worked with a team called Barhead, who partnered with us on the implementation of that. We have an internal team and they work with our partners. So we have an app called CrewMojo that we use for our team. So our team has this amazing system that also interacts with our Microsoft Office systems and Teams and everything, where everyone in the organization has their goals and they have their business goals, and you can have them for short term for the next 3 months, longer term your personal goals. So what are you going to do for yourself in this time frame as well? And so then their manager can look at those on a weekly basis in their WIPs. How are you progressing against your timelines on that? So it's really accountable, but it also enables support, because that's what accountability is about. If someone's falling behind on something and your manager can see, has visibility over that, then they can help you. And you don't end up in that, you know, 6 months down the track, that, you know, terrible scenario that things haven't been met and the person feels in a bad place, et cetera. And the other amazing thing that we use these apps for, and we had a previous one, and now with CrewMojo, is to give praise and tips to other team members. So, you know, at any moment in time, I can go onto my phone or onto my computer and go into the app and say, I just observed you in that meeting and you were exceptional. I just want to say, and it gives you a couple of categories you can choose, which link back to our values. So this now leads me onto our value piece. We moved a few years ago to one value. And the logic of that was that we had some values and they were great. They were star values and they were, you know, shining and teamwork and all those things, accountability, achievement, all of those things that you normally have in that area. And it had been great support for us. But I wanted something that was really uniquely Starlight. And what I sensed, because you often see values on walls of organizations when you walk in, I did some research of the top 50 banks in the world and the top 50 not-for-profits. And they had the same 7 values, okay? So I actually went to my team and listed values of a couple of banks or the top 4 and a couple of charities and had the names up the top. It was like match the head to the legs. And I said, okay, can you match these? And people couldn't do it. And I said, okay, I want us to have something that you can't take our name off and put a bank name on. Or, sorry, I don't want to be negative about banks, or another charity name on. So I want something that's uniquely Starlight. And so what we made the decision to do was to move to one value. And so our one value at Starlight is shine. And so we shine for purpose. We shine by being exceptional. We shine by bringing our best self to Starlight. So that's personal commitment. And we shine brighter together, which speaks to teamwork and collaboration. So it's, you know, for purpose, it's all about the children and young people. So there's different things. But in any moment, whatever you do at Starlight, it doesn't matter if you're a Captain Starlight and you're greeting that child who's coming into a Starlight Express room for the first time, if you're someone meeting a child on their Starlight wish at an airport, or whether you're on reception in one of our hubs, or you're writing an email to a donor to say thank you, in any moment you can say, am I shining? And how can I shine more brightly in what I'm doing? And so I think it's a wonderful value. And so back to Crewmojo, which is our app, you actually acknowledge someone and thank them and give them praise and say, in this moment, I saw that you were shining brighter together, or you were shining by being exceptional, or you were shining. You sometimes you can pick a three or four of those in the same one. So it all links back and all supports, you know, not only. So I think one of the things that we have at Starlight is absolute clarity around vision, mission, values. And I think that's important for any organization.
I like your idea of just one value that crosses over, but is also very meaningful to the brand. I really love that idea, because you're right that most places they couldn't even tell you what the values are. They're so generic. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about is for Crewmojo in particular, is that attached to your HR system?
It's separate but complements. So we also have we have a system which is we call Stella, and I'm trying to think of what the actual brand of that is. But we brand things with our own names within Starlight, and that manages all of our L&D. It manages all of our, you know, REM, our leave is, well, that actually links to the system that manages our leave, but that's all in there. So Crewmojo can link into that, but yeah, they're separate things. So we have ESS for leave. We have Stella for all of that L&D and training and onboarding and all of that kind of stuff. And then we have the others, but they all connect. It's not the one system though.
So on this, I'd like to continue this conversation around rewards and recognition. I think it's actually really hard for a lot of organizations, not-for-profits in particular, that have a lot of teamwork. And there's that balance between rewarding a team versus rewarding an individual. What's your view on this?
Well, one of my exec team has this great saying, which you know is a general saying, but she uses it regularly, which, you know, if you're shining a light on everything, you know, you're not really highlighting, you're not shining a light on anything in particular. And so we move between the two. So we have a series of awards. So every month I ask people to write to me at Star Reaching, because our strategic theme for the next 3 years is Star Reaching. Because we actually finished the 3 years of, well, last year, which was our three-year strategic plan, which the bulk of which had been in COVID. And because COVID actually gave us, in a very strange way, a gift of time and resource, because we were restricted in other areas. So we moved people onto other things that were on our list to do. But you know what? Where we run so lean in the charity sector, we would never have got to them. We got to them. So we're actually in a stronger position for the next 3 years than we would have been without COVID. Even though our numbers are down, and it kind of sounds counterintuitive, but we're stronger for the future because of the fact that we were able to move that resource into the areas that were on our to-do list that we would probably not have gone to. Because I think one of the things in this sector is you always have more to do than you have the resources for. So that helped us. So I've now lost my train of thought of what I was telling you about the next 3 years. What was I telling you that for?
Well, so we were talking about rewards and recognition, about team versus individual.
Yeah.
Individual.
So what we do is I have every month a Star Reaching Award. So people nominate to me during the month, and they say, so we had 32 people nominated, or a couple of those were teams, but mainly individuals nominated for star reaching. And I say, if in any moment you see someone and you think they were going above and beyond and shining really brightly, send me a note. So then I, in our national team meeting, announce them as star reaching. And they get that I write a thank you card to every person. They get a little reward with that. We also have innovation is incredibly important to us. And we have we work with Inventium, and we have had now we have over 30 team members who are trained in the innovation process, and they are innovation champions within the organization, because I'm a very big believer of innovation needing to be embedded across the organization, because innovation is any change which adds value. And so that needs to come anywhere. They're not a team that sit over in that corner and innovate. You know, I'm not a fan of that type of innovation. And so we have innovation awards twice a year, and we have had enormous numbers of those. And we have a project. You can nominate a project. So we talk about the Think Innovation Award. We talk about the Innovation Simplification Award. So where did you innovate? By actually making something more simple, because making something more simple can make everyone's life better. So simplicity is important. And then the other one is the innovation star. So who is someone that you have see and they are just constantly innovative? Whenever they come up against a roadblock or something, they're always in that innovation mindset. And so people get nominated. And so we then have those awards twice a year. So we have awards and rewards, but also within teams, managers are given, you know, a small budget that they can work with. So when they see someone being shining really brightly, they can recognize that. But also Crew Mojo helps with that, because when people get that feedback constantly, and you know that, you know, and the number moves from you need 5 to 8, some people say 13, positive comments when you've received 1 negative comment. So we try to keep people on the, in the black.
So Louise, you just talked about, I think, mostly staff. What about volunteers? How do you do rewards and recognition for them?
Our volunteers are so incredibly important, and they are some of the most wonderful people. So we make sure that they are rewarded and recognized constantly. We just had one of our volunteers who has just achieved 25 years. And we actually wrote to the state government here and have got a beautiful plaque that is about to be presented. So I hope this is not a spoiler alert. We make sure that we are thanking them, that they recognize. Most of them, when we thank them, will say to us, please don't thank me. I get so much out of what I do at Starlight. And so you get caught in this, no, I want to thank you. No, you thank me. No, well, thank you. But, and one of the hardest things at the moment has been that those people who work in the hospitals with us have not been able to do that. And there's a real hesitancy from the community about coming back into a hospital, because hospitals, you know, are where people see that, you know, most infections are and start. so it's something we're managing at the moment. But we have volunteer appreciation get-togethers usually. And I will try to make it to those right around the country where volunteers come in. My father and mother have been volunteers for Starlight. And I remember a number of years ago, my parents are both 87 this year, but a number of years ago, that they came to one of the volunteer appreciation nights. So this is probably 10 years ago. And my father said to me, I can die happy. Look at all these young people who are volunteering. So he went there thinking there were going to be a whole lot of old people there. And there are all these amazing young people who are university students or, you know, early in their careers who are volunteers for Starlight. And that quote from my dad, I thought, oh, that's priceless.
Yeah.
So we do most definitely. We try to practice what we preach, and positivity, appreciation, and gratitude is an incredibly important part of PosPsych. So it's something that we try to practice here at Starlight.
And I know, Louise, you talk a lot about leadership in some of your posts, and I'm curious to know, as a leader of leaders, how do you both, first of all, choose them? And then also, how do you manage them? I think that's an ongoing issue of leaders of leaders.
I don't think you choose them. I think everyone, and we talk about leaders are everywhere. And I think everyone, every person in their life steps in and out of leading. It might be that you're the leader who also always brings all your cousins together for Christmas. You know, you might be the leader who, decides that it'd be great to organize the meals for that friend who's just been diagnosed with cancer. But people step in and out of being leaders. So I actually believe that that leaders exist throughout your organization. And what you need to do is provide those opportunities where those leaders, you see them step up and in. And you see it. And you see it in the way they communicate and what they do. And they're not those people. I actually have a phrase I use and say, I am looking at all times for waiters with their heads up. Because when you go to a restaurant and, you know, most you see people and you have that person who walks past your dirty plates and doesn't pick them up. You have that other waiter and you look at them and they're fantastic. And when you get that experience, I often ask what they do and because sometimes they're at uni, et cetera, but you think, I would employ that person. So you, in a heartbeat, because you can see that they're curious, they're looking for things to do, they're making sure that they've got customer service, they're customer centric in everything they're doing, and you see that, and they're busy. You know, they walk fast, and so I'm looking for that within the team. So I think that I don't think I choose leaders. I think leaders choose themselves, and I think that we all have the potential to lead. And we move in and out of being leaders in our life in different ways. Some people prefer to stay in that family leadership area and community leadership, and others prefer to and are happy and comfortable to push that more in the work environment. But you need that mix of people who lead and that mix of people who are exceptional operationally, because you have to have, you know, you have to have things operating smoothly. And you have to have those people who are inspiring people, and you see it, and you see them very quickly.
I think that's incredibly insightful to look at it from that point of view. It goes back to the whole notion of what's the difference between leadership and management, doesn't it? Like you're looking at these people from a leadership perspective. And oftentimes when we speak about leadership, we're actually talking about management. So I love what you just said there. I thought that was very insightful.
Yeah. And we have a program, and we've just, I think, had 20 team members who are nominated. It runs over several weeks. And we refer to it as Base Camp because it pays tribute, and it's a leadership development course. It pays tribute to the fact that these people are not at the bottom of the mountain, they're already on the ascent. And so they're at base camp and we aim to take them to the pinnacle. And so it's recognizing that we've seen their leadership and that we're recognizing that and we're giving them tools. And so that enables them, gives them tools as to the phrase that's used is how do they put the bowling ball on the table and have those hard conversations they need to have with people? How do they accept praise? Because actually, one of the things that is a problem for people, if someone thanks you and you go, oh, no, it wasn't me, it was someone else, they've thought long and hard about in that moment saying thank you to you and you're just dismissing them. So say thank you. Say, I really worked hard on that and I'm so glad that you noticed. Don't dismiss it. So accept that praise. We all live in that world. I'm a shocker. This is my number. Oh, no. It was all of them over there. So, you know, accept that praise because they've thought about it. And then when you're giving feedback to someone, don't say, you were really good at what you did here, but. Don't use that but word. You were really good at what you did here. And next time when you do that, if you did this, you could be exceptional. So I think that there's lots of learning we can have and you can learn this. So I think that, you know, we're all on that journey of learning in our whole life, and it's important that people do that.
Like some great takeaways there for anyone. I'm conscious that we're nearly out of time, Louise. Is there anything else that you just want to share from for our listeners in terms of just lessons you have or just some knowledge you want to pass?
Well, I think as leaders, the most important thing that we need to do is we need to listen. We need to constantly be putting ourselves in their shoes. Because at any point in time, people can have a whole number of reasons as to why they do things, act in a certain way. And I start from the point that everybody is well-intentioned. And so if something hasn't gone according to plan, we as leaders need to be able to step in and coach them and support them through that. And for me, that's the imperative. And the only time I question, an individual being in an organization is right back to the beginning. If, you must have alignment and engagement to purpose, and you also must be aligned and engaged to the strategy, because that's the route that your organization is taking. Because you can't have people who are trying to, direct the organization in another way. I once had someone use the analogy that when you're a CEO, you're on the bridge of the ship and you're steering it one way. And if you don't have that alignment, you've got a whole lot of people in the engine room who are moving the rudders in different directions. And we need to make sure we're all heading in the one direction, because especially in our sector, I hold that our sector has to be the most effective and efficient, more effective and efficient than the corporate sector, because we are guardians of the donor dollar. So we have to, and having a team that is high performing is part of that. So we can't tolerate someone who's underperforming. So you need to be looking at, if you have that alignment engagement, then what, and the person necessarily has the skills, then what about it is the barrier for them being a high performer, and how can you help them to get there?
Great final words. Thank you for sharing that, Louise. If people want to know more about Starlight and just want to connect or to support the organization, where should we send them to?
You can go to starlight.org.au online. You can connect with me on LinkedIn if you have other questions and want to connect from a professional basis. And we would love to hear from you. And as we're kind of heading into Christmas, if people are looking to make donations, please consider Starlight, because the need for what we do is growing. And we really appreciate your support. So that's all I'd have to say.
We'll make sure we put that into the show notes so that people can find it easier. Louise, thank you so much for the knowledge that you've imparted today. There's a lot of good and useful lessons and learned there for other executives to take away and consider. I think I love things like your the one value aspect. I liked your view of how technology should be enabling the organization and how you might use it, and even how you have created apps to reward and recognize staff. I think that there's a lot of great things that people could take away from this episode. And thank you also for what you and your team do every day to support these poor kids that are just trying to make it through life.
Thank you. No, it's a wonderful purpose. And we have a team here that is so committed to it. And we don't exist without support from the community. So it's a real combined effort.
Hi, this is Tammy again. When I'm not doing podcasts, I'm helping not-for-profits with IT decisions. The question for this week's IT in Plain English segment is, when is it time to upgrade your system? As with most questions I get like this for IT investments, the answer is, it depends. If you're a not-for-profit, though, and you're currently hosting systems on servers, you should probably consider an upgrade to the vendor's cloud option or to move to another vendor sooner rather than later. Why? Because I find that most not-for-profits do not have the appropriately skilled resources to manage these systems effectively for today's cybersecurity risk. I also find that these older systems are not well designed for communicating with other systems, making it difficult to share data. Now, if you're already using a cloud-based software that has automatic updates, you may still need to think about an upgrade. This sometimes occurs when the vendor has different versions of their product based on either functionality and/or the number of users. The upgrade may actually reduce existing pain points or limitations. In reality, though, my not-for-profit clients rarely ask this question. Instead, they tend to use the same system until the vendor's support cycle ends, or they're forced to either upgrade the system or switch to another one. Or even worse, they experience a cybersecurity breach on a system that hasn't been supported in years. Then they're forced to find the finances to support this mandatory investment at short notice. It's my recommendation instead that you include IT investments into your strategic plans rather than being forced to react with the mandatory upgrade. And to reiterate, if you are currently hosting systems yourself on servers, the time to upgrade is likely now. So, there you have it in plain English. If you have an IT question you want answered, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and send me a message. I just might answer it on the show. And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe and leave me a review. To all of you executives with a cause, the world is definitely a better place because of you. Thank you for what you and your teams do every day.